Bunga, and welcome to Hidden Behind the Music Stand. I'm your host, Patty Ryan, and with me is Joshua Derringer, who is a violist and music cataloger and librarian at the University of Minnesota Libraries. He also occasionally performs with the Bard's Quartet and also arranges video game music for small chamber ensembles, and we'll be talking about anime and video games. Welcome, Josh. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, hello, Patty. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we kind of met each other through the pandemic, more or less. Don't you agree?
Yes, I do.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah. Like, when lockdown initially happened, of course, musicians found ourselves at home, not performing, everything wiped out of our calendar. And my group of friends just started playing video games together online. Thank you, Nintendo Switch. Thank you, Nintendo Online.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
And we would play Stardew Valley a lot, but we also would play a lot of Mario Kart. And our good friend so Ashley much. Ng would always invite you to join us because you're really good at Mario Kart.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was through that medium that we really got to know each other more and more. And then we would risk, quote unquote, risk the occasional hangout outside in person, you know, or with masks or whatever at the time when before vaccines were. I remember one particular on your birthday, we went to Sociable Ciderworks, which is one of my favorite places to go. And they had at the time, this was in January too. So like the midwinter of Minnesota. I think on your birthday, it was though around like 20-ish degrees. It wasn't so bad.
It was not bad compared to what it could was be, going on around it. I remember that.
Yeah, but they put out outside these fire pits on the tables so we would be warm and also enjoy some cider. So it was actually a really kind of nice way of gathering and hanging out together. So anyway, just long story short, I feel like that's how our friendship kind of blossomed, was through the video game medium and also just through having a lot of mutual friends together.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I remember like a lot of Overcooked nights.
Yes, well, because I'm obsessed with
I know. Yeah. And yeah, a lot of Mario Kart nights also. And yeah, we just, like, we started chatting and just started to get to really know each other. And it was nice, like, connecting with you like that.
So I'm actually going to ask things out of order. I'm going to ask about Lloyd, because I feel like that also was a very bonding experience between the two of us.
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me about Lloyd?
Okay, so Lloyd is a very ornery but very sweet cat. So Lloyd originally belonged to Patty, and
well, I don't know belonged. Or like, I found
you
Lloyd.
Found him and you housed him.
Lloyd found me, honestly. That's like how that really happened.
Yeah, go ahead and
I was like, maybe I should tell the story. I should tell the beginning
then
of the story.
I will
tag on. Okay, sounds good. So I came back home one day and I parked and I was walking towards my back door where I heard this meow, and I turned my head to the left and I saw this adorable black kitten, tuxedo kitten. And of course, being the animal person I am, I leaned down and summoned the cat to come towards me to, you know, pet or whatever. And Lloyd, I mean, I'd never named Lloyd. You named Lloyd.
Yeah.
But Lloyd came over to me and just was the sweetest snuggly puss ever and purred. And it was like, you couldn't not fall in love with Lloyd in that moment.
He does
and,
that.
Yeah. And I was like, oh my God, like this kitten is just lost in the backwoods of Minneapolis wilderness, and I need to take him in. Like, I just need to make sure that he's got food, but I gotta be worried about sushi because, like, I don't know what his status is with, you know, if he has FIV or if he has any of the other contagious diseases that could be passed between cat and cat. I didn't know what to do, so I separated these cats for a while until I finally was able to take Lloyd in to get a wellness check, and of course then he was negative for all the things, and I lived with Lloyd for about a month. But what ended up happening though is, unfortunately, Lloyd was a little bit too rough with sushi, maybe because he's a kitten, maybe he was trying to figure out, like, I picked him up from the streets and I put him in this confined apartment and there wasn't enough space, there's territory issues, so I felt like I couldn't justify having two cats when sushi was just not doing so well. And my priorities always will go to sushi. So I asked Josh to adopt Lloyd because I know, Josh, that you're such a cat person. And now you can take the story over.
Yeah. So before Patty just asked me one day if I wanted to adopt Lloyd. I was always hesitant about getting a cat because I was like, oh no, I won't be able to afford everything. I won't. It's a big responsibility. But in a leap of faith, I told Patty at first, like, if he doesn't get along with Sushi in this amount of time, then I will adopt him.
Right. I had to fix him too. That was the other side of it. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it was even after he was fixed that he still was being aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's his personality, because I live with him now, and yes, his personality is very aggressive but very sweet. He has
he has no in
between.
Well, when he sleeps, that's the in-between.
That's the in-between, and yeah. He's so adorable when he sleeps. Yeah, so I took him in, and I was like, I'll just see what happens, and from there on, I was like, I can't live without him now.
Yeah.
Like he's...
Oh, that makes me so happy.
He's a part of my family. He's the sweetest, and, like, when I come home now, he runs up to me and jumps on my pant leg like a dog, and I pick him up, and I'm like, oh, he's so cute. And then he starts to get fidgety, and we play later. It's so funny because every time
he has so much energy.
He has too much energy. I remember Kelsey Farr, past guest, was like watching him, and she was like, I played with him for like a good 2 hours, and now he's tired. Like, oh my god, she has so much energy. Yeah, so now I have him. He's much grown up than he used to be.
Yeah, I mean, I've cat sat for him a time or two, and I think even since I got him, he's mellowed out a little bit. So hopefully,
as he
continues to age, that he will just continue to just mellow, and he'll just continue to be this his sweetest self, because that part of him is so amazing. How old is he now? Do you remember?
He is 1 year old. One year and a month. Yeah.
Yeah, he's still gonna be a kitten for a couple more years, I think.
Yeah. I guess why I named him Lloyd. I mean, that name comes from one of my favorite games, a character's named Lloyd, and Tales of Symphonia for the Nintendo GameCube. Yeah, so that's one of my favorite games of all time, and I was like, this is perfect. Either I have a name for a guy cat or a name for a girl cat.
Right. Okay, so I know that I asked some of these questions out of order, but it only made sense because Lloyd is dear to both of our hearts.
I'm thankful that you asked me.
Oh, I'm thankful that you took him. I mean, I didn't know what else. I mean, I didn't know what to do, right? I mean, so I'm sure Lloyd is very grateful for the both of us.
I know he is. At the end of the day, even though he's rowdy, he's a cat. He doesn't really know. Well, sometimes I think he does know better, but...
But he tries to push, like, his limits a little bit. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Can you tell me your most insane performance story?
Yeah, the one that comes to mind right now, and actually this from you performing the Grossa Fuga a few weeks ago, it reminded me of when I did it in graduate school with like three of my greatest friends in grad school. Like, we had only 3 months to put it all together. I might be over exaggerating, but it was tough. Like, I was practicing the Grossa Fuga like every day for like 2 hours with a metronome, and like, I need to get this together. And it looked like, I mean, we were slowly getting it, but I think after a masterclass we did for the cello professor, it was like, we got it, sort of. Well, mostly.
Yeah,
we did everything we did to performance, and performance happened.
Yeah.
And we did pretty darn well, I would say. I just remember the rush that and then I look at my recording, and I turn page, and it's like, whack! I was like, okay, I was dramatic. And then, oh my gosh, at the end, to give some context to this, my chamber music coach, Harry Karp of the Pro Arte Quartet, he was like, the ending of Grossa Fuga is like a cow going into a barn to go home. And I'm like,
oh,
I'm going to take that idea and really run with it, literally. So, I kid you not, my bow jumped up probably 2 to 3 inches in the air on the eighth notes.
Okay, that makes sense to me. Okay, so the viola at the very end has this driving triplet. Well, not triplets in 6/8 at that point, but it's like really, it's the motor of the end.
It is.
Yeah, so you like, you let the bow fly.
And I pushed the tempo. And my gosh, it was such such a rush. It was nothing like I ever experienced. And I look back at it now, like, oh my gosh, it's so
extra.
Weird.
But then,
so
like,
extra.
But like, what other piece can you be that way with? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's a, that piece is a journey.
Yes. It's daunting, but man, it's so pleasurable for me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, are you ready for some spitfire questions?
Sure.
Okay, Mahler or Bruckner?
Mahler.
Debussy or Ravel?
Oh my gosh, I've been thinking so much about this. Mm-hmm. What mood am I in right now? I'm in a Debussy mood.
Debussy, okay. Yeah. Did a particular piece come to mind?
La Mer.
La Mer.
I heard it recently, and my gosh, I love it. But Ravel just has so much good, like, chamber music.
Yeah,
it's like, it's so hard to choose between those two.
I know, it's an unfair question.
I know, like the Ravel piano trio, oh my gosh.
I know. That's. I think that piece, to me, is one of the best pieces ever written. It is pristine.
Yes.
It
is. Oh my gosh.
If you haven't listened to it, seriously, go on Spotify. Go to the Beaux-Arts Trio version of it. You will not regret it. Take 20 minutes out of your day.
Yeah.
Cats and dogs. Well.
Well, yeah, cats. Okay. But I am having a soft spot as I grow older for dogs. Okay. They're really sweet.
Dogs are, yeah. Appetizers or desserts?
Desserts. I love desserts.
What's your favorite dessert?
Well, ice cream. I would say that's my number one.
Good. Sparkling or still water?
Still water.
Fan favorite question. Alternate universe musical instrument?
I've been waiting for this one. Mm-hmm. So I want to play the drum set.
Drum set. Okay.
It seems just like a fun time just to be able to, I don't know, make lots of percussion noise and stuff like that. Also, a lot of video game music has a drum set.
Okay.
And it's like key in a lot of soundtracks.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, drum set definitely would be the one I would choose.
Okay. Early bird or night owl?
Night owl. I stay up way too late.
Okay. Pandemic guilty pleasure?
Oh goodness. There's been quite a few. I guess the most notable one is watching the recent Pokemon anime season, Pokemon Journeys, as it knows it is in English. It's been quite fan service-y.
Okay.
And that's the main reason I love it, and it's a guilty pleasure. It just shows a lot of characters from the past seasons, and I'm like, oh wow. I love this.
Yeah. I'm going on a slight tangent here, and it's because I have very little experience in both anime and video games, and I know that that's your topic of interest today, so you're going to be educating me a lot. So, for me, I feel like a lot of Nintendo games that are being released are nostalgic games, but for me, they're brand new games because I've never played these when I was younger. Do you find that to be true with anime as well?
Yeah, with all the remakes, all the reboots.
They're like trying to market particularly our generation that grew up with the OGs.
And they are also trying to reach out to new people as well. They keep that in mind. Yeah, I guess there's could be a whole section on remakes and re-releases and how each one is crafted like that. Yeah, it's a balance they're trying to definitely make, I think, because they have to attract new people as well. It's
right.
Like they can't keep marketing to the older generation. Like they need to pull in so everyone will start enjoying the same thing.
And to me, that reminds me a lot about a formula that Star Wars has been very good at. Star Wars has become such a huge empire, for lack of a better word, of not just being nostalgic for not just our generation, but the generation before us. But now it's like really targeting the younger generation, and it's never going to leave our psyche for as long as we know. And I feel like video game companies are absolutely trying to copy that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like with Mario,
mm-hmm.
I can give that as an example. They re-released 3 older games. And then they released a recent 3D world.
Yeah.
And now they're going to release a new Mario game soon, but we'll see. But I guess that wasn't exactly a good example. But I mean, there's Zelda, which I still haven't played.
Wait, what?
I haven't played Breath of the Wild.
Oh my god, Josh! What are you... Stop this interview and start playing Breath of the Wild.
I know,
That was like my entry... That was my gateway drug to video games. Thanks, Ari Isamura, past guest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Zelda's doing a wonderful job of this. Like, they released Breath of the Wild, then they released an old remake, Skyward Sword, mm-hmm. and now they're doing Breath of the Wild,
too. They also
did Hyrule Warriors. Yes, yeah. I forgot about that one. Yeah. So, yeah.
Very different platform, though. Yeah.
Yeah, they're starting to definitely trying to bring in, like, everyone together to move on to the next one. Yeah, I would say Zelda is a better example than Mario right now. Mario is just weird. Anyways.
Well, there's so many Mario games, I think they just don't really know how to focus in, whereas Zelda, I feel like it's always been a little bit more of an RPG
Yeah, thing. And... or they just say, like, Mario will just sell. Let's just make something, or release something.
I mean, they're not wrong, though, I think, for the most part.
No, nope, they're not.
Yeah. Anyway, favorite professor shout-out?
I want to mention past guest, Dr. Juliet Whitesmith.
Hi, Julia!
She has been such a good mentor.
She was so amazing. I really loved interviewing her.
Yeah, like, in undergrad, she came in as my teacher my junior year, and, like, she had all this stuff she planned out for, like, all this technique, just to refine that, and also, like, explore some new musical stuff, and I think it was a great combination, and our personalities were great together, and yeah, she was so good at what I needed at the time in my viola playing. And later on, like, when it started the pandemic, we reconnected because I was starting to, like, say, like, what do I really want to do with my career?
Right.
So I consulted her, and we talked for, like, a very long time, and then I even helped her with some research of a project she was doing, and yeah, and then she really helped me at that time too. So I really, that's a big professor shout out to her.
Yeah,
she was so good. And also my graduate professor at UW-Madison, Sally Chisholm. Goodness, she refined everything even further than before. Like, some of my best performance memories were in graduate school. Oh. Like the Beethoven I mentioned earlier, a Hindemith 11-4 performance I did with a friend. It was the highlight. And yeah, she always had the philosophy of meeting the student and not just saying, like, you have to do all this stuff and everyone has to do the same stuff. She tailored it so well to people. It's a philosophy I bring to my career now in supervising and training student assistants, actually, in cataloging. So shout out to you, Sally. I miss you so much.
Yeah. Most inspired musical hero of any genre?
Ah, yes. People in graduate school would know this. Joe Hisaishi, composer of Studio Ghibli films, including Spirit Away and Howl's Moving Castle and My Neighbor Totoro. My gosh, I love his music so much. It just, oh my gosh,
can
it's
you
just
describe
so
it
magical
for those who haven't heard it.
Yeah, he's able to actually do quite a variety. Like in Howl's Moving Castle, he revolves the music all around a waltz theme. He just takes that one theme and just runs
like a 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2 Yeah,
and of course, like in other movies, more like based on like Japan and stuff, he like somehow mixes that together with like Western sounds, and I think it's its own style. One friend of mine, which is interesting, like he said, he's like Rachmaninoff, but not really. And I'm like, I can see that with some harmonic stuff. But I guess, in short, his music sounds very nostalgic sometimes. Also, like, you're a child again. So it's like some parts are like
it's
that
endearing.
Or that.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So when you hear it, it's like, oh my gosh, I remember that. Or like when you hear it, it's like, oh, I'm so excited. Something like that. The versatility in his work, my gosh, I really admire that.
Absolutely. Most transformative performance experience?
Besides the Beethoven, one of my great, great, great friends, Yana Avidyan, and I played Hindemith 11-4, and that performance will always stick with me.
Can you describe like what this piece is for those who don't know?
Oh, sorry. So Hindemith 11-4 is a sonata for viola and piano, and it's in three interconnected movements. Yeah, it's a slow beginning and then two theme and variations movements after that. So basically you get to hear the viola and all sorts of different characters.
Also, Hindemith was a violist. Okay, so people know that he knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, this piece is just one of my favorite pieces to play. You know, like, you have one of those pieces that it just somehow just speaks to you.
Yes.
Or it's just like, this is the piece that I feel like I can express myself in the best. That one was it.
Okay.
There's a lot of characters that I was like, yes, I get into this really, really a lot. lot. So at the performance, everything went so well, and I was so surprised, but yet so excited. Like, at the end, the viola and the piano play in unison, like, a full line together, and then I was like, I lifted my bow, like, 8 feet up in the air to finish, and then I, like, turned around and hugged my pianist, because I was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. And then at that point, I was like, okay, well, that totally changed my life and how I wanted to look at how I prepare music from now on and try and get to that, like, excited and focused mentality that it's hard to get into, honestly, but when you get into it, it is gold.
Yeah, totally. Desert island piece of any genre.
That is tied between Brahms' second piano concerto with the lovely cello solo.
I know, that's so good.
And the third movement. And then also the Princess Mononoke symphonic suite by Joe Hisaishi earlier.
Okay.
If I had those two pieces, or even just one of them, I would be content. So much good music.
So you can probably hire an orchestra on your island and then just, like, ask a pianist friend to play Brahms 2.
Yes, let's just do that.
Okay. So you got a lot of friends on your island.
That'd be nice.
Yeah, okay. Well, you finished the Spitfire questions. Congratulations.
Yay. Yay! Yeah. I love it!
Okay, Josh, walk me through your musical origin story. How did you get introduced to classical music, the viola? When did you decide to take that in a more serious route? And walk me through the steps to where you are today.
Yeah, so it all started in fifth grade, and they were like, okay, we're gonna have an orchestra class. And at first I was like, oh, whatever. And then I saw my friends were going off. I was like, maybe I should do this.
Oh, okay.
So after that, I was like, okay, I'm going. Sign me up. And then I remember now, I was one of the latecomers because I decided way late in the game, but they still accepted me, thank goodness. And then they're like, which instrument do you want to play? And I was like, Well, I never heard of the viola before. Let's go with that one.
Oh, okay.
So I started viola, and after that, I went through middle school. At that point, I was like, I'm meeting a lot of cool people through my orchestra class that I get along with extremely well. And then, thankfully, my middle school orchestra teacher at the time was like, yeah, you should go on to this after-school orchestra program that happens, like, once every 2 weeks or something like that. And then I went, and then I got to meet a lot of other cool people, nice conductors and teachers. And then I started getting involved in my local youth symphonies after that. And then I was like, I feel like I found my crowd. Because before, I had no idea what I wanted to do. Like, I tried sports, I tried all these other things, and they just didn't really speak to me, per se, I guess.
Okay.
So, yeah, I went through all the youth orchestra programs. And in high school, I went to what they call a residential high school, a long word, long name, South Carolina Governor School for the Arts and Humanities, SCGSAH for short. And that experience was life-changing for me. Like, I got to know more of myself, like, what I wanted to do with music. At that time, I was like, I want to be an orchestra musician, and I want to improve as much as I can. And so, yeah. But yeah, high school was a pivotal moment for me to realize that I wanted to, if at all, keep viola in my life forever, keep music going. Because I just enjoy practicing, meeting people, playing music with people. It's just so nice to just sit down with some people and say, let's play through this. Or, like, rehearse, like, let's make this the best that we can make it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether to mention this now or later, but high school is also another time that another interest crept up. But I guess I'll mention it. So I worked, or I volunteered time to reorganize all the scores in my school's library.
Wow. So you volunteered to do that. Yeah.
Yes. I was like, this, I love all these scores. Oh my gosh. And then I was like, I'm making the shelving system and of course it was a mess, but it was so much fun. I was like, oh, I love trying to make it easier for people to pick things out and stuff like that. And that would, foreshadowing, go into another part of my life. So yeah, like, university comes around. I guess I have to go back to it now. So during my last year of school, I met with the librarians, like, you like to do this a lot. Do you know that you could be a librarian? And I'm like, I did not know that. And then my teacher was like, oh yeah, talk to him. He can give you like pointers and career advice. And I'm like, I never thought of this. This would be an interesting thing to explore. And he was like, yeah, I went to library school and for my master's and now I work here. And I'm like, yeah, he was a fantastic librarian. Like, I don't know where I would be without him. And the other librarians in that library, my gosh. So I went into university applications being like, I want to be a performing violist and a librarian. So I applied.
Is that like something that's out of the ordinary?
I don't think so, because I've met lots of people who are doing both.
Okay.
But yeah, so I went to university like thinking I want to prepare as much as I can for my master's program, which will be in library sciences and music.
Right.
So I decided to do a double in musicology and performance. And for shadowing a musicology later. But,
right.
Yeah, so I went through school, practiced, tried to get better, tried to learn as much as I can in the musicology program, because I wanted to take all that knowledge I got at Ohio State, which is where I went to school, take it with me to graduate school. So when it came time to apply for graduate school, I focused on double programs, which did like music and library sciences.
Right. How many programs are there in the country?
Of combined?
Yes.
Oh, there's not that many.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Are they like elite to get into?
Yeah, there are definitely elite ones to get into. I applied to Michigan, IU, and Madison were the big three I did. And I ultimately chose Madison because I decided I want to still get better at performing rather than musicology.
Gotcha. What are those auditions like to audition to be both a librarian and a music major?
So, yeah, auditions, you basically apply for each program separately. So for the music program, it's like regular audition. You go visit the school, and I've just played music for them and talked to them briefly. Had a lesson with Sally. And for the library program, it was mainly like, I think, essays, basically.
Essays?
Like just like personal statement and...
Oh, okay.
Like, why do you think this program would benefit you?
You didn't have to, like, sit down and take a test for the librarian audition at all or anything like that.
Well, the GRE, but...
Oh, okay.
But... That's no. No entrance exams, thank goodness.
Yeah.
Not even for the music program, which was very nice.
Yeah. Okay, so then you were at the University of Wisconsin-Madison.
Yeah, so I concentrated in library school on cataloging and metadata, which traces back to my time at OSU when I worked at the music library there. And one of my great mentors there introduced me to that. And he's like, yeah, do you want to see what I do? I was like, sure. And then I watched him. I was like, okay, I want to do this now.
Okay, so can you tell me, what is that?
So cataloging and metadata, just basically describing something for the purpose of someone able to find it later.
Okay, yeah.
So like Google searches, for example, that uses a lot of metadata in the background. You just don't see it. So like when you search cat, it will bring up search hits about cats. And somewhere in there, the metadata is deemed this cat related. That's what basically, in the library context, cataloging and metadata is. It's like when you look up a music score in the library, the record is put in there by a cataloger with the mind of like, hey, someone might need this later. Let's make it so that when they search it,
it comes
pops
up.
Right up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that was my concentration in grad school.
Gotcha.
In library school, at least. And performance was like anything and everything I could do,
right.
I would do it.
And so then after grad school, did you find yourself in the Twin Cities? Like, how did you get here?
So yeah, after grad school, I went off and worked a temp job for a science lab, of all places. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ryan Folk, my cousin, mm-hmm. for having me for a
the
good
botanist.
9 months. Yes, the botanist. I worked on various projects in his lab. It was a good experience just getting outside for a little bit. And then I got my first music library job at the University of North Texas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, where I was a music cataloger, and one of my other great mentors was there. She retired. She taught me like almost everything I know about cataloging and metadata, and set a very, very good foundation that I build up with like future supervisors that I'll talk about.
Yeah.
So at the UNT, what I referenced earlier about student assistants, like I trained and supervised them. And that's where I really took the philosophy of my professor at UW, Sally Chisholm, and meeting the student.
Yeah.
That really helped. It made me relate to them a lot more, get the concepts in a good manner. Mm-hmm. So, but otherwise, yeah, after that, I was there for a little while, and then I got a job at the University of Minnesota Libraries in the Twin Cities mm-hmm. as electronic resources cataloger, which that was a little, I wanted to try something a little new for a little bit. So
okay.
It's basically I catalog ebooks and streaming videos uh-huh. and did catalog maintenance, which is basically the catalog you search in. I just did a lot of cleanup, so it'd be even better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did that for a while, and now I am, and as of March of 2022, I became a music cataloger again, and now I'm supervised by my friend and mentor, Christy Bergwin. So it's been a pleasure working with her so far and learning even more things.
Yeah,
so.
Congratulations as well. I remember that you were shifting towards something that...
Shifting,
yeah, yeah.
Yes. That's a great... Because, yeah, and I will backtrack a little bit before that. And I was really questioning, like, what did I really want to do with my career
yeah.
in libraries and music?
Right.
At the start of the pandemic, I was definitely feeling this way. I mean, it's a good time to think when you're
absolutely
indoors a lot.
I think that's, like, what everyone was doing at that time, too.
Yeah, exactly. So I fortunately remembered that video game music studies, ludomusicology exists because I was like, oh yeah, this would be fun. And even at my time at UNT, it started to come back. I wanted to do more on video game music and libraries. So I went full in. I was like, let's start preliminary research. Let's get involved in all the video game music conferences and start meeting people. Well, virtually at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now I feel like I found where I want to go in my career is be this advocate or be this person who does research in video game music and libraries, and how that can benefit a wider community and also the people within the scholars and students in video game music studies, just to be able to find materials.
Mm-hmm.
And recently, this year in 2022, I was honored to be invited to speak at an event on video game music mm-hmm. and libraries at the University of North Texas.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to continue this research on and just make a path in this career.
Are there any current projects you wanted to talk about?
So, library specific, two big projects I want to do are making a guide on cataloging video game music, because I think there are specific challenges or specific elements that they have that would be useful in a catalog. And also, like, the startup collection type guide is what I want to eventually get out there too. So those are two big video game music and libraries projects.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of arranging, I am currently making a viola concerto with Super Mario Galaxy themes.
Wow.
So that'll be an interesting where that goes. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited for that one because I love Super Mario Galaxy.
Yeah. All right, Josh, are you ready to take a break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we'll be right back. Well, Welcome back from the break. So, you already mentioned a little bit about your introduction to anime and video games, but tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so I've liked anime even before I knew it was called anime. When I was a kid, I liked Pokemon, one of the biggest shows of my childhood. Yu-Gi-Oh!, a trading card game show. Like, all those shows. Like, there was a Kirby show. Mm-hmm. There was so many of that. I was like, oh, these are fun. And, like, Dragon Ball Z and Sailor Moon. Mm-hmm. Those two shows also.
So, can I just ask, what about that animation attracted you to that medium?
I think it was mainly the animation itself. Because the music is a different story of anime at that time. Because America really localized everything. Mm-hmm. So, a lot of anime that was localized at the time, like Sailor Moon, Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh! They had American soundtracks. And then the original Japanese are completely different when I looked back at that right now. Mm-hmm. So, because the animation is very bombastic. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. So that's what really got me into it. And also the voice acting. Like, as a child, I really thought it was funny at some points. Mm-hmm. That I would just rewind it over again and watch it. I don't know. Animation's always been, like, even outside of anime, like Pixar and, well, Avatar The Last Airbender as well. It's like all those kinds of shows just, I don't know, they speak to me a little, like, a lot. Animation to me, I'm able to imagine a lot more. Mm-hmm. Because I don't see people. I see, like, representations of people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, I can imagine the world they're in. And so I think that just spoke to me more and related to me more than seeing live action. I think that's the closest way I can explain why I really like animation in general.
Yeah.
As I was saying earlier about, like, Studio Ghibli, like Hayao Miyazaki, Joe Hisaishi's work. Gosh, those movies are, like, phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Spirited Away explores the young child's emotions and mind. It's like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, this is what it was like to feel like this. Mm-hmm. And then her coming of age at the end, like, she's matured so much. Mm-hmm. It's like a lot of themes you can get from those movies as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, anime in general, it just spoke to me because the bombasticness of it, the music, well, that later on, like, the music, I love it.
So do you think that you were attracted more to the music or to the animation, or did the music catch on later? You know what I mean? Like, was the visual or the aural more important at first, and what's more important now?
Yeah, visual was more important to me. Like, all those Sailor Moon transformation sequences. Mm-hmm. My gosh, I was so obsessed with those. Mm-hmm. Because I would just watch it like, oh, I can watch again and again transforming into their really nice outfits. But now I really appreciate the music, because nowadays, since anime's become more mainstream and more, like, popular with Western audiences, there's barely any localization except for dubbing. Mm-hmm. Like English dubbing, or like any other kind of dubbing in any other countries, like German dubbing.
Yeah,
anyways,
right.
So now, like, I get to hear the music of the artists from Japan. It's so fascinating hearing what their pop culture is like.
Mm-hmm. It's like you almost feel closer to that than when you were growing up, almost.
Yeah, exactly. And I watched some of the shows in Japanese that I watched in English as a child. I'm like, wow, I've missed so much. Mm. I mean, it's a different I didn't miss anything. It was just a different experience. The localization team just changed it completely. I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Now, looking back and comparing between, as you're saying, these, like, new revitalized versions, or going back and watching the old Japanese version, to now, you know, remembering what the Americanized, lack of a better word, version of this, do you have any takeaways from that? Or are there any pros and cons, thoughts overall about that?
So, like, there's a lot of anime now. As we spoke before about video games, it's being rebooted, mm-hmm. remade. There's one, oh my gosh, it's my favorite of all time now, Fruits Basket 2019. It's basically a reboot of the 2001 anime, and expanded on and changed a lot of things. And of course, it's harking back to the old one with old fans trying to pull them back in,
right?
Because it's the same characters.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's breaking new ground with new fans. It's like, oh my, someone who hasn't seen this before is like, do I watch this or do I watch the old one? And I'm like, yeah, just try this, the new one out, and just see what it is. Like, I see a lot of reactions on YouTube of people who haven't seen the old one. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating because they don't have, as you probably have experienced with video games, they don't have the nostalgia. Mm-hmm. They're just like, oh wow, this is a pretty darn good story.
Right. Good.
Or like, oh, I don't like this part of the video game that other people remembered mm-hmm. it being good. So, and also, I mean, they're able to hit so hard in Fruits Basket, like, themes of dealing with life and stuff that really meant a lot to me at the time, like dealing with depression mm-hmm. and anxiety. Mm-hmm. So there's like tons and tons of anime for anyone who's interested out there. Like, you get the romance, mm-hmm. you get the like adventure, and everything in between, honestly. Mm-hmm.
Just like music, right?
Yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Exactly like music.
Mm-hmm. So since you mentioned video games, what about video games?
So yeah, video games, my gosh, I've been playing those since I was like 5, I would say. Uh-huh. I had a Nintendo 64, and from then I just played Nintendo stuff, since that's all my parents really allowed me to have. Okay. But yeah, I grew up with Mario all my life, and there was a point where I sort of like went off, and that was in grad school, because I was so busy. Mm-hmm. Like, especially when I got out of school, I was like, I need something to help me. Like, get through the stresses of, like, yeah. post-grad life. Like, you're not busy anymore, or you don't have a job yet.
It's like the off button from work.
Yeah, exactly. So I sit down and I play my comfort games, I like to call them. Like, lately I've been playing Animal Crossing mm-hmm. and Mario Party. Mm-hmm. Those are my main two. I've been playing so much of those. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, video games have been so important in my life, not only just to entertain me, but like to enrich my career, enrich, like, I met so many friends because of it. So it's like music in that regard. Mm-hmm. I met people through music, now I meet people through video games.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is similar between meeting musicians and meeting people through video games?
During our gaming, like, I like to refer to ourselves as our gaming group. In cooperative video games, especially mm-hmm. when we did battle games in Mario Kart and we were on teams, mm-hmm. it was a matter of like planning out with people, like, okay, we do this to this team.
So strategy. Or,
like, strategy, yes, yes. And then also, like, just in general, just chatting with people. Like, the easiest game that was Mario Kart, just to sit down and be like, hey, how's life? And then just steer through a course.
Mm-hmm. Right. Slightly also, mindless, but also you're like still focused in some way in the game.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
also in conversation.
Yeah. So yeah, some of my favorite games definitely are RPGs, mm-hmm. like Tales of Symphonia's role-playing game. That's where Lloyd comes from, mm-hmm. who I name my cat. Mm-hmm. So I just like the story. It's it kind of relates back to anime. It's like the same like type of like imagining yourself in the character, mm-hmm. like in the world. It was easier for me to do that there. It's interesting because I got so involved in some of those games, mm-hmm. and it's fun. But it's a lot of investment, I have to say, mm-hmm. just to sit down and play through the story. Mm-hmm. It's not like Mario Kart, we can just do a few races and put it down.
Right. I mean, do you ever find yourself sucked into and, like, therefore unproductive in other realms? I definitely do, but, like...
Oh my gosh, Mario Party's that example. Oh,
okay.
Yeah, Mario Party, I play and I'm like, oh, it's, like, my guilty pleasure in games. I just waste time on it.
Yeah.
The same time I think, maybe I will play tournament Mario Party or competitive Mario Party one day.
Yeah, I mean, that's another question. Like, would you ever do Twitch or anything like that?
Oh my gosh. I don't have the technology, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe someday. But I enjoy watching other YouTubers and Twitch streamers, so something to maybe look forward to one day.
Okay. So what are your top 5 anime and what are your top 5 video games?
Well, so disclaimer, I could list all Studio Ghibli films, but in this list, mm-hmm. I will not. So I will just do 5 anime that have been really on my radar lately in no particular order. And also, this can...
In no particular order? That's the whole... Okay.
Oh, well, maybe I will try and rank them.
No, you don't have to. It's fine.
But, of course, this can change. So, I mean, at number 5, I just finished this one, actually, like, last week. It's the Evangelion Rebuild series, split up into 4 movies. So, like, the history of this franchise is that there was an old anime, which I watched a few years ago, but now they made 4 movies based on the same characters, and I go back and forth which one I like better, but I decided I like the newer one because I think it resolves the story in a nicer manner. As we were mentioning before, it's like the old and the new type concepts, right. Which is going to be a big theme on this list today. But number 4 would be Yuri on Ice, which is also a recent watch. And now I'm realizing I watch a lot of like romance type-ish anime. I don't know why. I just gravitate towards them.
Well, I mean, there's got to be like a little bit of tender and delicate emotions that surround romances when they're done well, right?
Oh, definitely. I've seen a bunch of like cheesy anime, cheesy romance films in general. And although there are a lot of cheesy moments in these, I just gravitate towards those. But I know like a lot of past guests have mentioned a lot of shonen animes, which I do like too, but I just gravitate towards the other side a little bit more. But anyways, so Yuri on Ice is about this ice skater that basically works through his anxiety about doing his best. And it's handled very well in a cheesy disguise.
Okay.
If you look at it in the surface, it's like, okay, this is just a cheesy romance, which, by the way, the romance is between two guys, which representation between the Japanese ice skater. And I think it's done very well, and they left it sort of on hold, and I hope to see more of the series. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess number 3 would be Sailor Moon. It's a classic. I love both the classic series and the newer Crystal series for different reasons. Like, the classic series does a lot of character development, and there's some good filler, some bad filler. It has some really good music, too. I tried not to rank these in order of the opening themes that I like, because there's so many good openings out there for anime. It's like an art form they do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back to Sailor Moon. It's just very nostalgic for me. My favorite is Sailor Saturn, because she's very dark and mysterious. But she takes center stage in the 3rd season of both old and new series, which I really like. So, 2. A lot of these are recent watches. Actually, I'm kind of surprised.
Well, is that a signal of where anime is going?
I guess so, because I've been recommended a lot of these, and yeah, I guess you're right. It's like, where's anime going from here? So this one is called March Comes In Like a Lion, Sangatsu no Lion. It deals with a shogi player, which is basically shogi is like chess, but not really. But this young person is a prodigy, and he deals with all the like anxiety and depression that goes with it. Like, he's more of a recluse. He opens up eventually, and it deals with a lot of emotions very well. And also a slightly cheesy disguise at some points, but I think it does it very well. And also, the food in that show looks so good. The animation of food is getting so good now that I have to have it all the time after I eat it. My number 1, it is Fruits Basket. The reboot, yes. Especially. The old series was a favorite of mine growing up as well. So I guess I like anime that deals with a lot of human emotions and like experiences like that. Yeah, this series deals with similar things as March Comes In Like a Lion and Yuri on Ice. But it's also light enough that I can watch it and not be like so sad.
Yeah, it brings a little bit of levity to a heavy topic.
Yeah, yeah, that's what
heavier emotions.
And all those have really good openings and endings, like the themes. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, I play those all the time when I'm cooking or something like that.
Sure.
Yeah, they're very catchy. And they're visually gorgeous most of the time. Mm-hmm.
Video games, okay. Yeah, Tales of Symphonia, number 1. Animal Crossing New Horizons, number 2.
Wow, okay.
Tales of Vesperia, number 3. That's another RPG.
Okay.
It's in the same series as Tales of Symphonia. Mm-hmm. And then I would say after that,
see,
Super Mario Galaxy?
Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah, what were you going to say?
Well, no, I'm just curious where whenever you end up playing Zelda Breath of the Wild, I wonder where that's going to rank. But I know you haven't played it, so I am curious of your number 5.
Mario Party Superstars, number 5.
Okay, sure. All right.
I really need to play Zelda.
Yes, you do.
Zelda Breath of the Wild. And Hollow Knight.
Yes, you do.
You get I've only gotten through part of
it. I know. You have to stick through it. You have to stick through Hollow Knight. I know you're going to lose all your money, but in the game, you're going to lose all your money, but it's worth it.
There are so many good reviews out there for Hollow Knight. It's such a good game. Oh my gosh.
And also, Breath of the Wild is also just like, I would say you got to play Zelda Breath of the Wild before you play Hollow Knight.
Okay.
I didn't know. I known that you didn't have Breath of the Wild, I probably would have gotten you Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, and how can I not mention Pokemon in my top five video games?
Well, you can now.
I know, like Pokemon Heart Gold and Soul Silver. Very cliche choice for the gamers out there. Play Pokemon, yeah. But I love that game.
I mean,
I love Gold and Silver as a kid. It's nostalgia. Yeah. It's a remake.
Yeah.
So it's gonna pull
all the heartstrings.
Yeah, and funny enough, right now there is a book published about nostalgia and video game music that I just learned about recently via the Ludo Video Game Music Studies community. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I need to check that out. I wonder what's going on with that.
Oh, for sure. We have nostalgia with Beethoven string quartets or whatever.
I know.
So it's a thing.
Yeah, classical. Yeah, I'm guilty with classical music.
But there's even a visual element to it now too. It's like even more developed than even a Beethoven symphony or Beethoven string quartet.
Yeah, definitely. Those two are like two of the biggest parts of like my beyond work career. Like I love to watch anime. I love to play video games, and I love to meet people who have interest in that
absolutely.
Too, and people who don't, so I can tell them about it.
Yeah. Can I ask you two final questions?
Yeah.
What is one piece of advice you would tell your younger self about entering and pursuing a music career?
You never know where it will go. Let your interests take you where they want to.
So people say curiosity kills the cat, but you're saying the opposite, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my curiosity in video game studies has gotten to me in a place where I feel like I want to pursue this more and connect it to libraries and maybe even go back to school to study it some more. So,
okay.
Let your interests take you to where they take you.
I mean, honestly, I've never understood that statement of curiosity kills the cat, because like, how do we grow as a society if we don't have curiosity?
Exactly. Or wanting to learn new things or worrying about each other.
Right. Anyway, just a little thought. Okay, my second question, as we enter a seemingly post-pandemic world, what elements of your musical pandemic life would you want to continue and what would you want to shed?
Well, I would definitely want to continue connecting with fellow librarians and musicians on social media. That's been really nice for me. Mm-hmm. I have a Twitter account and I met so many awesome people in the video game community and the library community and the music community this way. So it's like I got to learn so much from all of them. So it's like I want to continue trying to keep up with things and like network, honestly. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, I mean, I guess I would want to I've gotten into the very bad habit of overthinking things, like even to a more extent than now. And I guess live in the present moment. I just want to leave like overthinking behind and try and be like, you're here right now. Do what you can. Mm-hmm. It took Fruits Basket to make me realize that. Actually, that anime I mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
It meant so much to me just to see all the characters go through their struggles of depression, anxiety, and just make it out in the end. Like,
right.
That's how powerful that show was. Like, seeing all of them make it in the end was just inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you'll have a more difficult time than others to try and live in the present moment, but I mean, that's what happens with life.
Exactly.
As long as you just...
And you surround yourself with people that are there for you to remind you that every day.
Definitely.
Okay, Josh, are there any platforms or websites for our listeners to learn more about you or any upcoming projects?
Well, I guess since I mentioned Twitter, until my Twitter account, JD_VGMCatLib. So follow me there if you want. Otherwise, I'll be mainly just tweeting out when I complete projects there. So
okay. All right, and if you enjoyed listening, be sure to smash that subscribe button wherever you're tuning into this podcast. Leave a review on Apple Podcasts while you're at it. It doesn't need to be long. Your review will help others search for the podcast because of its crazy algorithms, and you'll make Sushi's day, and it's free. Make sure to share this podcast with your friends and family as well. If you want to level up, you can always become part of the Hide and Behind the Music Stand family by donating what you will on our Patreon page at patreon.com/hideandmusicstand. Our social media for Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter is at Hide and Music Stand, and we'd love to hear from you at our email, hideandmusicstand@gmail.com. Didn't recognize a piece we discussed during the episode? No worries. There's a Spotify playlist with all the music discussed for your convenience. The link is in the description of each episode. Josh, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Patty.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening. Sushi, say bye.